From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Georgia's Republican State Secretary Brad Raffensperger has just announced a hand recount of votes cast in the November 3rd election. President Donald Trump and President-elect Joe Biden came within a few thousand votes of one another in Georgia. Just days ago, the two Republican Senate candidates, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, had called on Raffensperger to resign. Now, control of the U.S. Senate hinges on those two Senate seats in the same state as all eyes turn toward Georgia. The Republican Party has been in lockstep with President Donald Trump on his claims of widespread voter fraud, presumably in exchange for his support of the two GOP candidates for Senate. My guest is Tia Mitchell, Washington correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She writes about Georgia's congressional delegation, campaigns, elections, and more. She's also chair of the Political Task Force for the National Association of Black Journalists. Welcome to the program, Tia.
Thank you.
So how strange it is that it came down to two Senate races in Georgia, and just the reason why that happened. I understand that Georgia is only one of two states where Senate candidates have to receive at least 50% of the vote in order to win outright, or they head to a runoff. And were it not for this rule, we probably wouldn't be seeing a January 5th runoff, right?
Right. Georgia requires candidates for state-based offices up to Congress, pretty much anything except for the presidential race, you have to get to a majority of the vote. And so in races where there are lots of candidates or races that are really hotly contested, often they're pushed to a runoff if there are more than three candidates and no one gets to 50%.
Which is what happened on November 3rd. The Republican Party has finally reached 50 seats with two wins this week of Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Dan Sullivan in Alaska. If they win even one more seat, they retain majority control of the Senate. So that means for Democrats, the task, if they want to get the slimmest of controls over the U.S. Senate, Democrats will have to win both of those runoffs in Georgia on January 5th. Now, you've written about the political machinations are behind the scenes around the presidential race and these two Georgia Senate seats. What can you tell me about how Senate Republicans are going all in on these Georgia races, the deals that they appear to be cutting behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's been interesting because we know that President Trump is accusing states that have flipped from supporting him in 2016 to apparently supporting Joe Biden this year. He's accused them of perhaps having fraudulent elections or somehow just taking those states from him, Georgia being one of those states that right now, with counting still underway, it looks that Joe Biden will win the state. And that's something that has not happened in Georgia in quite some time. And Trump has said that
in terms of a Democrat winning, Georgia.
Yes, in terms of a Democrat winning in a presidential election, the last one was Bill Clinton in 1992. And so Trump has said that that must indicate that something is wrong, that something, some type of fraud or malfeasance has happened. And what we're seeing is that Republicans, the two senators you named, Perdue and Loeffler, but also other Senate Republicans, other Republicans in Georgia are echoing that. And the key thing to note is that there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. You know, we know that no election is completely perfect because people do weird things, but we're not talking about thousands or even hundreds. We're talking about very isolated cases where there are any. And so that has not stopped President Trump from saying there's fraud, and that hasn't stopped other Republicans from echoing him. And we, as you noted, we think that Republicans are doing this because they want to curry President Trump's favor, whether it's now during the runoffs, because we know that he does still have a lot of sway over conservative voters. And without conservative voter turnout, Republicans cannot win in Georgia.
So you also have the situation where Georgia is the state where just a couple of years ago, a high stakes gubernatorial race where Stacey Abrams narrowly lost to then Secretary of State, now Governor Brian Kemp, was riddled with accusations of voter irregularities, with suppressing in particular the black vote. Now you have, and of course, as when Kemp won, he became governor and his position as Secretary of State handed over to Brad Raffensperger. Has there been an improvement in access to voting since 2018? We know that Republicans have, if there's going to be any rigging of any elections, it would be in favor of Republicans, not Democrats.
Yeah, it's been interesting because a lot of the issues that Stacey Abrams raised in 2018 had to do with long lines, different interpretations of the law that judges were using to determine which absentee ballots were and were not counted, voter purges, changing precincts and things like that. And she said that it was all amounting to voter suppression because not everyone was able to cast a ballot and feel comfortable that ballot was counted. Those are the issues she's raised in 2018. And as we know, the pandemic also caused a lot of changes between now and then. And so there was even wider use of mail-in ballots. Georgia did not have a smooth election in the June primary that was delayed because of the pandemic, but there were, again, very long lines. Georgia has a new voter system to actually, you know, put in your ballot, log your vote. And there were a lot of technical difficulties. And so Abrams and voting rights groups and Democrats were still troubled as recently as June. But all that to be said, in November, the election in Georgia was relatively controversy-free.
And in fact, Abrams herself and her organization Fair Fight, we now know, helped to register more than 800,000 new voters in the state, which may have been a big reason why Biden narrowly won that state and maybe even why those two Senate races are going to run off.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Stacey Abrams and her group Fair Fight, the group she started years ago called the New Georgia Project, that is specifically focused on voter registration. You have other groups like the Movement for Black Lives and Black Voters Matter, and all of these, the NAACP, the Democratic Party, all these groups have been very active in not only ensuring that young and voters of color are registered, but then also making sure that they are motivated to cast their ballots and that they were taking advantage of the different ways you can cast ballots. And all of those groups and organizations, and of course, Stacey Abrams led the way, really, Democrats felt that they had a lot of successes during the general election, and there were very few complaints as far as how the election itself was done.
In the article that you co-wrote with a number of your colleagues in the Atlanta Journal Constitution, it's called The Jolt, The Orchestrated Push to Discredit Georgia's Election Sparks More GOP Infighting. You detail essentially what's happening within the party in Georgia. As I mentioned, the two Senate candidates for the GOP wanted Raffensperger to resign. Raffensperger said that's just not happening. He denounced any claims of voter fraud as a hoax and that, you know, there's just no way that he was going to be stepping down. And you point out that the president and his top allies pressured the two Republican senators to take this step, lest he tweet a negative word about them and risk divorcing them from his base ahead of the consequential runoff. Is there a sort of symbiotic relationship happening here, where Trump is trying to make the case to the nation that he didn't lose the election. There is just widespread voter fraud. And so it's sort of a face-saving thing for him to be able to claim that the vote was rigged. And he has the entire GOP in lockstep with him because the entire GOP sees that they need those two Senate seats to not fall into Democratic hands.
Right. Unfortunately, right now, it looks like a lot of this is not motivated by what people really believe. It's motivated by politics. So you have the two senators who want President Trump's support. They've worked to curry his favor all along their tenure in office. And so that hasn't changed. And they don't want him to publicly criticize them. And so they're kind of doing whatever it takes right now to fall in line. Same with other Republicans. You have the governor who's kind of caught in the middle. So he's kind of parsing his words so he doesn't flat out contradict President Trump. But he's also avoiding the same criticisms against the Secretary of State, as you mentioned, the job he held until he became governor. And so he knows that if he allows Trump and other Republicans to just trash the Secretary of State's office, that becomes an indictment on what he did as Secretary of State. So he's really caught in the middle, trying to appease both sides right now. And so there is a lot of infighting. There are a lot of Republican strategists and kind of people, right, lawmakers, people on the next tier, if you will, of government, who don't necessarily agree with what's going on, but they don't feel empowered to push back very severely. And they also get that, you know, the pull of President Trump, his ability to keep conservative voters kind of under his thumb, it's a big impact on the party. It's hard to go against President Trump and still turn out conservatives in a state like Georgia. So it's going to play out really, really interestingly over the next few weeks, so, because it's unlikely to change anything.
Right. So Georgia becomes the center of the American political universe between now and January 5th. Already, we're seeing very dirty tricks. Kelly Loeffler has accused the Democratic Senate candidate Raphael Warnock of a long history of anti-Semitism and embracing the anti-Zionist Black Lives Matter organization. Apparently, Warnock once signed a letter likening the West Bank to apartheid South Africa. So I'm wondering if you're hearing about this, and you know, we know Republicans fight relentlessly, fight tooth and nail, will not spare any effort, will not adhere to norms and ethical boundaries when it comes to winning political power. And I'm wondering if Warnock and Ossoff and the entire Democratic Party is really up to the task of fending off what are likely to become, you know, worse and worse attacks between now and January 5th.
So it's interesting. Back in March, when Warnock was just starting his Senate campaign, I, along with our religion reporter, Sheila Poole, wrote an article about Warnock and his progressive activism, his defense of Jeremiah Wright, his sermons on
He's a reverend, yeah.
He's a reverend, you know, and he's a reverend along the lines of Jeremiah Wright and others in Black liberation theology, which means if you take their words out of context, the way that we saw that Republicans tried with Jeremiah Wright during Obama's campaign in 2008, if you take them out of context, it does sound really bad. So you've got to put some good faith effort to understand what he's saying. And that doesn't mean everyone's going to agree. You know, when it's easy to color any criticism of Israel as anti-Semitism. And we know that Jewish people are very sensitive to criticism of Israel because that's a very fraught conflict with the Palestinian people. But again, there can be good faith arguments that can be made that doesn't necessarily mean someone's anti-Semitic. Someone can criticize America, can point out America's racist past, can point out that America is a place that is built on systemic racism and oppression of people of color. And that doesn't mean they hate America. That means they're telling the truth. Now, the question is whether the voters of Georgia will take the time to really understand what Reverend Warnock is saying and not just take Republican critique at face value. And once they really dig into and try to understand Reverend Warnock, then they can decide whether he would make a better senator or not. But we know that Republicans are going to try their best to attack him. They're doing something similar with John Ossoff because he owns a media company that once did work for Al Jazeera, and that's been used to, you know, accuse him of being, you know, in line with, you know, radicalism. And so, again, those aren't necessarily accurate. They're out of context. They're hyperbole. And that's what attack ads are meant to do. But it's up to voters to really dig through that and get to the truth.
So do you, what sort of work do you see the Democratic Party doing now in Georgia? We've been talking about the work that the Republican Party have been doing, if the word work is even the right word, you know, very, very suspect tactics, let's put it that way. But if Democrats really want to control of the House, of the Senate, rather, they're going to be needing to pour a lot of resources into Georgia, which, of course, sad for the residents of Georgia. It's probably going to mean another month and a half of being blitzed with political ads. But are the Democrats sharpening their knives?
Well, it's funny. You know, it's interesting that Democrats so far, I'm sure there will be plenty of attack ads against the Republicans on behalf of the Democrats, you know, accusing Kelly Loeffler of being a rich woman, which she is, and having the different business ties that she's had. Same for David Perdue. He's also wealthy and conservative and supporting President Trump and all of those things. But Democrats right now, to me, they've been focusing on three efforts. Number one, trying to introduce John Ossoff and Reverend Raphael Warnock to voters in a way that can help frame them in hopes of kind of, you know, trying to already go on offense before the ads get too prominent. So they're trying to introduce these candidates to voters in a friendly way. They are working on voter registration efforts, asking people now to go ahead and start requesting their absentee ballots, getting registered if they need to, getting prepared to vote. And then the other thing is money. Stacey Abrams has been raising money over $7 million at this point. And we know that they're gonna need a lot more. Kelly Loeffler herself spent $23 million just on her own campaign in the general election. And her husband spent tens of million dollars more to support her campaign through outside groups.
And they still, so, and she still didn't manage to make 50% of the vote.
Well, that's because that's a special election. There were 21 right, candidates. True. So, you know, if there are 21 candidates, you wouldn't expect, you know, in an open, pretty, you know, kind of
right.
an open
that,
race.
That was the one race that was expected to go into runoff, right?
Yes, we expected that to go into a runoff because there were so many candidates. And then we also, you know, she didn't expect to have someone running in an attempt to run to her right in U.S. Rep. Doug Collins that kind of split the GOP vote. But yeah, you know, they spent a lot of money during that general election campaign, and they could spend just as much, if not more, if they wanted to in the runoff. They're worth over $500 million. And so if Democrats are going to compete, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to compete dollar for dollar, but you can't get too badly outspent and expect to win a race like this.
It strikes me that we have not seen an actual finish of the November 3rd race because these two Senate races in Georgia, in fact, have turned into a continuing referendum on President Trump, precisely because those two GOP Senate candidates and, in fact, the entire Republican Party are equating Trump, you know, Trump and the two Republican Senate candidates in Georgia are on the same team. They're seen as part of the same team. So here's another chance for voters in Georgia to say, to not only direct the outcome of the election in terms of Senate control, but to say how they feel about President Trump and his allies, right? You know, although the presidential race did not hinge in the end on Georgia's 16 electoral college votes, it is still going to be and is the center of the political universe in the U.S. now.
And you're right. I think, you know, for better or for worse, Republicans have made this a contest about President Trump. And that didn't work out very well In the presidential race, we know Joe Biden is likely to carry Georgia, but the stakes are a little bit different in the runoff. You know, now there's going to be concern about should Democrats control all three branches of government. There's also a turnout question because Democrats have not done well historically in statewide runoffs. Republicans have been better at getting their voters to show back up, but this is definitely going to be framed in a way that is about President Trump.
On the issue of registering voters, do Georgia voters need to re-register to vote in the runoff race, right? So registration efforts and their deadline for voting in the runoff is December 7th. Registration efforts now are going to be aimed at voters who didn't cast their ballots on November 3rd or before.
Right. They're focused on registering, you know, young people who may just now be turning 18. New residents to the state who may need to update their voter registration, and anyone who just hasn't been engaged. People don't have to re-register, but they do have to request absentee ballots. Even those who requested absentee ballots for the general election have to go back in and put in a new request if they want a mail-in ballot for this runoff.
And of
course, that's another big focus.
Right. COVID infection rates are surging now higher than they've been even in the spring. So the dangers around voting in a pandemic in January are going to be likely much higher. And the challenge for both parties is going to be not just to register new voters, but to get those who voted on November 3rd to come out for the second race, to come out one more time.
Right. And that's been difficult for Democrats. They have not been successful. There was a runoff, I think, in the early 2000s in Georgia, and the Republican won. There have been other statewide runoffs. It doesn't happen very often, but the few times it has happened, Republicans have prevailed. We know John Ossoff was in a very high profile runoff. That was for a congressional seat in a district at the time that was starting to, you know, become purple, but had been controlled by Republicans. And he had hoped to flip it blue. He was not successful in that runoff in 2017.
Finally, do you think that the fact that this race is on January 5th might impact the turnout for, say, young voters, right? Young voters were found to be a big demographic in this race. January 5th, many of them, if they're college students, might be still in college, although, of course, because of COVID, many are in remote school. I'm wondering if the timing of the runoff could impact turnout in any way. I mean, just in terms of where there's, because the vote was so close on November 3rd, granular changes are going to have an impact.
I don't know how much of a factor it will be, because it also could fly on the other side that it's happening during the holiday break. So people are more mobile. They can get, if they need to get back to Georgia, they can. You know, I think, but I do think, I would imagine that Democratic groups are going to focus more on the mail-in voting, early voting, just to kind of avoid those last minute issues that might come up. You know, you don't want folks waiting till the final day of the election and then having issues or having trouble getting to their precinct. You'd much rather them do the things ahead of time that build in that flexibility and allow you to go ahead and have your vote be counted.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Tia. Appreciate your time. We will link to your pieces in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution from our website. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Tia Mitchell, Washington correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, where she writes about Georgia's congressional delegation, campaigns, elections, and more. She's also the chair of the Political Task Force for the National Association of Black Journalists. And we've been discussing the political pressures on Georgia ahead of the January 5th Senate runoff races. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.